Hi, this is Tommy Shannon, and you're listening to Iron City Rock. Enjoy it.
Hey, this is Quinn Sullivan, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hey, this is Jeff Pilson, and you, my friend, are listening to Iron City Rocks, where it really, really rocks.
Hello and welcome to episode 530 of the Iron City Rocks podcast. I'm your host John, coming to you from the Iron City of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, bringing you the best rock, hard rock, heavy metal, and blues talk on the net. Episode 530, we are pleased to be joined once again by a man who needs no introduction to hard rock fans. You know him from his time in Dokken. You know him as the backbone of Foreigner. You know him from the Revolution Saints, from End Machine, Mr. Jeff Pilson joining us. Jeff, an amazing 2024 already. It is April as I'm talking to you. He's got a new album out with Revolution Saints and End Machine, which features George Lynch, Robert Mason, among others. And Revolution Saints, obviously, this is, I believe, their fifth album now. This is Dean Castronova, Jeff Pilson, Joel Hoekstra. No shortage of talent in either one of those bands. And if that was not enough, that would be a good year for a lot of musicians. He's got a tour with Styx and Foreigner and John Waite, which will be coming into Pittsburgh July 31st. Star Lake, you'll get to see those two great bands. And also a huge congratulations to Foreigner, the entire Foreigner organization, Lou Graham, Mick, as well, for finally being recognized by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The interview you're about to hear was during the voting period, so I want you to listen to that with that context when we talk about that, so you know when we were talking about it. So we'll play you a little Jeff Pilson. Let's get into that interview. And then coming out of that interview, we're going to introduce you to Quinn Sullivan.
Seasons
pleasure to welcome to Iron City Rocks. We have on the line Mr. Jeff Pilsen. How are you doing, Jeff?
I am doing fabulous.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time. I think in the time we could to do this interview, you might be able to knock out another album or two. I have to look, you know, in keeping up with all the things from Frontiers, especially, your name comes up constantly. You know, you did some work with George and Michael Sweet, the Revolution Saints.
I didn't work with George on the Michael Sweet record that I remember. Did I do something on that?
you made the press as contributing on bass, so maybe I'm remembering incorrectly.
I don't think that's actually accurate. I'm pretty sure James Lomenzo played on that most of that stuff. Who is a fabulous bass player, by the way.
you had to sublease some of your time for that. I have to ask, how do you keep it all straight? Because I know you do a tremendous amount of production. Obviously, you've got to do media for all these different releases. But I mean, just in the next couple of weeks, we've got the End Machine, you've got the Revolution Saints record. How do you keep it all straight and then still have time for, you know, kind of the day gig with
Well, I mean, I'm good with time management. And, you know, when I'm home, I have a very understanding family and I do a lot of work on my time off the road. You're not seeing it, but this is my recording studio that I'm in, and I have a beautiful recording studio. So I'm very fortunate. And it's attached to my house, so that's kind of cool. So I can come in here and I can work very, very hard and get a lot done. And I also have a studio that I carry with me on the road, so I can do some, I can do editing and things like that on the road. So I'm able, I like to work and I like to make music and I like to be in the studio. So I just use my time well.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a different scenario that, you know, like when we think about the beginning of your career, where you guys, I mean, you were doing album every year or two. But, you know, a lot of a grind on the road for this. Is this easier, the model that we're at now? You're one of the few musicians that have really kind of maintained a high level of work. You, and I think of George as well. You know, you guys have stayed remarkably busy and seen the music business change so much. But you were around back when it was, you know, multi-million dollar albums, you know, to create and, you know, to go to a studio for months and live there. Do you prefer this method of working where you have some ability to do some things virtually, et cetera?
Well, I what I'll say is the method of working, which we do a lot of remote stuff and we do a lot of stuff. When I work with George comes over here and we collaborate together. That's my favorite thing. You know, Reb Beach was out a couple weeks ago to start the next Black Swan record. And you know, collaborating one-on-one is my my favorite thing is a band going into the studio and playing like a band and, you know, recording that. We don't have the luxury of doing it like that these days. Mm-hmm. So that's why I can't say I prefer it. But what I will say is these records wouldn't be able to happen without the technology being involved and being able to do things the way we do. Like I say, I still push for collaboration as much as possible. When we're doing the M Machine record, you know, Steve comes here to do drums and we work together on that. You know, as a producer, I like to be there when the stuff is done. But I'll say that this method does facilitate the ability to put out a couple records over a couple months. You know, and again, I have to use my time management. I mean, I use my downtime to do a lot of recording. And, you know, Foreigner does tour a lot. So I do have to plan things. And that's difficult, but it's worth it because it's a labor of love.
Yeah. I mean, I look at just Revolution Saints. You've got to worry about Journey's schedule. You're going to, Whitesnake, if they do take it back up on the road, the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, Foreigner. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot just to juggling that. Throw in the Black Swans, it's got to be kind of a logistical thing. Do you feel like, and maybe some of this goes to your being the veteran, but you do have to, in a way, I guess, schedule creativity. You mentioned Reb coming to visit, you know, you can't have writer's block when you're kind of scheduling windows like that. Does that inspire you, or sometimes is that a bit daunting?
Well, I've been fortunate because, you know, everybody I collaborate with so far are wonderful musicians. And when we get together, I mean, one of my jobs as producer is to inspire the artist, you know, and when it comes out, you know, I want to get him in a position where he's feeling good, where his guitar sounds great and he's just inspired. You know, it hasn't been daunting, but I owe that to the caliber of people I get to work with.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're all focused. And when Reb comes out here, he knows, okay, we got a week. We gotta be creative. We got to work hard for a week. And so he knows that ahead of time. And I think he does his mental prep. And he usually comes with several riffs that we base songs off of and, you know, that he's recorded. And that's, you know, that's how we kind of get started. And generally, you know, one or more of those riffs get us going and get us pumped up. And once that happens, the chemistry between the musicians, it so far hasn't let me down. And I guess I'm fortunate for that.
Does that kind of like having a riff that maybe quickly goes into a song, even if it's not, you know, the best song on the record, does that kind of snowball into making, you know, you get one or two going and then before you blink an eye, you're at 13, 14 songs? Does that sort of happen that way? You know, one success?
I mean, what I'll say is a riff can definitely snowball into a song. I mean, that happens all the time. And generally what happens is we'll take that riff and then we'll, together, we'll sort of feel out where should it go, what should happen with it, you know. And sometimes Reb comes in with, you know, with most of the pieces of a song, and then sometimes it's just a riff. It's different every single song, and that's the beauty of it, you know, is you treat each song independently and differently, and you know, you have to evaluate each song on its own. That's, you know, this is the only way you could do it. But yes, they snowball into things, and that's a pretty cool quality.
Yeah. Does not having the ability to really have the time to tour on these, though, is that a challenge? Because you think of a lot of bands get almost a sixth sense of playing with guys. And you've played with Reb in the past, obviously. Mm-hmm. Joel is as professional as can be. You know, he's kind of a chameleon. But does that not having the time to build the chemistry that you may have with George, for example, after years and years on the road, or Mick, or, you know, some people like that, does that take a little bit of verbally saying some things that maybe you don't have to talk to George about?
Well, I mean, George and my chemistry is so automatic and so long-term and so deep. We don't have, we could go without speaking, I think. Yeah. Come up with something. But, you know, language sort of helps. I'm fortunate. Most of my collaborators, like with Revolution Saints, I never worked with Dean. Mm-hmm. But I know his work on drums very well. And now now having done a couple records with him where I play to his drums, I know his drumming on record pretty well. I have worked with Joel. I have played with Joel. So that sort of helps that chemistry. I've done a million things with George. And although Steve, I've never been in a band with Steve, I have played live with him before. And he feels so much like Mick Brown that the chemistry on M Machine musically just feels so automatic and natural that I don't worry about the chemistry. And we're sort of lucky in that way. With Black Swan, I have played live with Reb, and I have played live with Robin McCauley. And in fact, I have played live with Matt Starr, only in kind of jamming situations. Right. But I know those musicians in the way that you get to know musicians when you play live with them. So I feel the chemistry does have the secret ingredient that playing live kind of adds to the mix. So I don't feel it in any of my collaboration. I don't feel it being a deficit in any of my collaborations. As you brought up, the logistical nightmare of doing shows with these bands is very clear and understood, and we know it going into it. So it doesn't become a frustration. It only becomes a frustration when the desire is there to go out and, you know, it's like, God, what a great band live we would be, you know. And so it's a little frustrating that none of these things tend to go play live. But having said that, this year, 2024, is my final year of the long 9 months of the year touring this is the end of that. So my schedule in 2025 will start to open up more. So will George's, because he's on his farewell ride with the Lynch Mob.
Right.
So our schedules are going to open up. Now that doesn't mean we can automatically tour any of these things right off the bat, but we can start to try better when there's more time. So the desire's there, the hope is there. Maybe the time is there. We'll see. Again, it's really, really difficult to pull that stuff off. So yeah, it's probably more frustrating than it is a realistic thing, but we'll see. I mean, the desire is there, so we'll see.
Yeah, and what a wonderful problem to have, and not to make light of it, but I mean, to have so many irons in the fire that you enjoy playing, you know, on a personal level, to not have enough time to do it all. You think of bands out there that are just kind of drudging through or you know, doing because they have to. You've got material you're itching to get out there and don't have the time. So that's a good thing to happen.
First world problem, by absolutely.
Yeah. So you mentioned the end of the kind of the long Foreigner tour. Do you guys ever talk about, or you know, what that's going to be like? Because I mean, you've been doing this now. I think everybody, you know, when they think of your name, we think of Dokken because we grew up seeing him in Dokken. But you've been doing Foreigner for so long now.
20 years.
Yeah, you're like at, you know, gold watch level and beyond at this point. So do you think, you know, I'm sure there are nights where you're like, okay, you know, these songs, you get the pop from the audience and that makes it all worthwhile, but you know, it would be nice to just do something totally different every once in a while. But does it seem weird, the concept of not having 9 months of your year?
A little bit, sure. I mean, you know, I have been doing this for pretty hard and heavy for 20 years, with the exception of the 14-month period we had during the pandemic, what we didn't play. But, you know, it's bittersweet. I mean, I love this band. I love the people in this band. I love, speaking of Foreigner, I love all the songs, and I didn't write them, but I love them. They're great, great songs. And I feel, you know, but partly responsible for making sure the band is good, because I'm the musical director. But you know, I love it, and I love playing, and I love the audiences. And I've always had a magical gift of where once I start playing a song, whether it be in the studio or anywhere else, there's no like or dislike. If I'm playing mostly bass, but other instruments, even when I'm playing a song, I love that song at the moment, and it's amazing. So that's a quality that I've had ever since I was a kid. I mean, I used to be, you know, I was in country western bands when I was a teenager, you know, and things like that. And when I played, I loved it. So that's a really magical gift that I've had over the years. So it never becomes tedious, which is just amazing, because I've been on the road for over 40 years. So it's really nice. So it's bittersweet. At the same time, I'm not a youngster anymore, so traveling is very difficult and tiring.
Yeah.
Even though with Foreigner we're treated quite well, but you know, do I look forward to being in the studio more than on the road? Absolutely.
Yeah. Did it feel, you know, like a big win? I mean, obviously the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, at least being up for it this year, and in the voting, you know, obviously they did go through different permutations of the lineups and things like that. But did you feel, I mean, regardless of whether your name is in the hall or not in the hall as part of Foreigner, does just being the band reaching that level of recognition finally feel like in some really large way that you've helped contribute to that by keeping this music going for all this time?
Yeah, I do. I feel like I've helped contribute to the visibility that the band has, which I think is partly responsible for the nomination for induction. I think that helped. I mean, you know, listen, the first thing is how great the songs were and how great the band was.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, Foreigner, and we all know Foreigner should have been in probably a long time ago. And there was a personal vendetta that held Foreigner back from being nominated that is now not there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's kind of amazing that the first year that the vendetta is gone, the person responsible for the vendetta is gone, and then all of a sudden we get nominated. So, I think there is absolutely the band being on the road for the last 20 years certainly has sold a lot of catalog records. And I think it's certainly kept the visibility of Foreigner out there. You know, I mean, we've been on national television shows a lot. The tours are doing extremely well. I think those things really help. But I would never take credit beyond that, because it really is about the songs and the band, and those guys deserve to be in. We would, you know, I wouldn't be in, but they deserve to be in, and anything I can do to help, which includes, please include a link and tell your listeners about voting for the fans, the fan site that allows the or that votes for the nomination, because boy, would that be great.
Yeah, I think you're on a very short list of bands. You know, I think that everybody every year goes, they nominated XYZ, and not literally XYZ, but you get my point. But you know, the Eddie Money, the Foreigners, the, you know, different bands that I think everybody looks at and said, how did that band not get in?
Right.
So it was wonderful to see. And I think, you know, as a fan myself who grew up kind of, you know, I remember I Want to Know What Love Is, for example, was a big hit when I was younger. But a lot of the rock Foreigner songs were at that point already on, you know, more catalog titles at that point. So it was great coming out to see you guys the first time. And I was like, holy crap, you're one of these bands that you don't remember how many songs there are until you sit in that room.
And you're that like, all the time. And I think the songs are more famous than the band. Yeah. You know, I mean, I mean, it's amazing how many people they know. You know, if you go blam, 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 oh, Cold as Ice, they'll know that right away. May not even know it's Foreigner. So, yeah, it's pretty amazing. The songs. And again, I think it's the songs are the lifeblood of Foreigner. They always have been. I think they always will be. And those records were amazingly recorded and the performances are stellar. So I think, I think you're right. I think Foreigner deserves to be in there. And again, it's the power of the music. It was never an image band. It was never anything like that. So let's hope that the music gets the band in. That would be great.
Yeah, if certainly the platinum should, if nothing else. All right, Jeff Pilson. New albums available now from Revolution Saints and Machine. And you can get your tickets to see Styx, Foreigner, and John Waite at the Starlake Amphitheater on July 31st. So no shortage of Jeff Pilson in your 2024. Turn our attention now to a young man who opened for Beth Hart, I believe it was two years ago, at the Palace of Greensburg, and I think really left a nice impression on a lot of people there in the audience. His name's Quinn Sullivan. Quinn, who is at this point is only 21 years old, will be coming in to do a show on June 28th at the City Winery. For those of you not familiar with the franchise of the City Winery, there's in various cities have City Wineries. Pittsburgh, relatively new to get one of those. And if you're not familiar, think Metropole Rosebud area across the road from the terminal, I believe it is, over in the Strip District. So not far from the Graham bus station. Let's be honest, if you're at IDES getting some music, you're really, really close. Quinn has got a new album called Salvation coming out June 7th. So we wanted to introduce you to him. He's an amazing guitarist. Seen him described as a singer-songwriter, but I like to think of him as a singer and a songwriter because I don't think jamming those two terms do him justice. As a musician overall, I think singer-songwriter, think of acoustic guitar and folk-type songs. I think of Quinn in a different level than that in his guitar playing. So he's been playing and touring in some incredible locations. He's been on television when he was before he was 10. He's gotten some praise from amazing musicians. So it's a great chance to see him. If you've not been to the City Winery, looks like an amazing place to catch a show. So really a good chance to check that out. So we wanted to introduce you to him. So without further ado, Mr. Quinn Sullivan. All right, ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to welcome to Iron City Rocks. We have on the line Quinn Sullivan. How are you doing today, Quinn?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. It is a beautiful day here in the city of Pittsburgh, and you are headed our way, thankfully, once again. You'll be dropping in, not until June 28th, but as time goes, that's pretty fast. We had a chance to catch you with Beth Hart. In support of her, and I got a lot of great feedback from the folks that caught that show. So pleasure to get the chance to talk to you and had a chance to listen to some of the new material that you've released with Salvation. So can we start with Salvation and you know, where, you know, as you grow as a young man and a musician and life kind of gets in the way, does that kind of what seeped into the writing of the album of Salvation?
Yeah, I think so. On this album, I feel like I have you know, have gone the deepest I've ever gone on any album that I've made. This is my fifth album that's coming out in June, and it was recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, with a producer by the name of John Fields. And I met John last October, and we just kind of hit it off very quickly. And I went to his studio, and we started to come up with the title track, actually, Salvation, with a co-writer named Kevin Bow. So it was us three in the room writing the song, and you know, I had an idea when that session was over. I really felt really, really confident, and I felt like this was kind of the start of a new album. You kind of never really know when you first meet somebody if you're gonna connect with them on any level, but John and I just kind of connected based on just our influences of who we like, and we both share the same love of the Beatles. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a nice, you know, kind of bridge gap that we kind of, you know, put together. And so it was just such a fantastic process. We wrote all of the songs in the same studio at John's studio in Minneapolis, and we created everything, and then recorded the whole album in about 2 weeks, which is probably some of the fastest I've ever done. Sure. When it comes to making an album. So, but I loved that because John is so efficient the way he works, and I really enjoyed that, and kind of coming at it from like the let's get this done and not waste any time kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it ended up working out really well, and I think it kind of shows, I think, in the music on the album. It's a very kind of genre bending album. There's a lot of different sounds on the album, some modern sounds, some older vintage sounds, and I kind of always sort of like to bridge the gap between vintage and modern sounding when it comes to like sonics on albums that I make. So I'm really proud of this one. It's definitely a step, I think, in the right direction for me as an artist, and I'm just so excited for people to hear it.
Yeah, I can't imagine the anticipation of waiting to release an album and have to wait even a week or two. But you know, as production and vinyl and mastering and all that stuff goes, it takes a while for all that to get done. But you know, and it's interesting you mentioned about the genres, because I listen to you, and there are parts of things I hear where like, okay, this guy's got himself kind of firmly in, I don't want to say pop music, but you certainly got a pop sensibility to it. But then I hear Stevie Ray Vaughan, I hear, you know, just certain things. It reminds me a lot of when John Mayer did the, I believe it's the John Mayer Trio records, where, you know, there's certainly some blues in it, there's some guitar, but they're songs that are going to appeal to more than just people who are guitar nuts. No pun intended there. But the lyrical, like, when you went in to the studio, did you have sort of the shell of the songs together, and you know, he just helped you bring them to fruition, or was it kind of a co-write sort of thing?
A lot of them had the skeleton already. Like a lot of the songs I had already sort of started, and a lot of the music to a lot of these songs I had already pretty much had crafted on my own at home. I kind of like to do that when I'm kind of in album mode and writing right. mode. I definitely put a lot of it together by myself, and I like to kind of have that separation from anybody else, really kind of the genesis of the song. But, you know, I'm also a huge fan of collaboration, and I think, you know, my favorite way to make music is with collaborating with other people. So it was very appropriate to bring these ideas that I had to John and to Kevin. And, you know, we ended up just creating these songs together, you know, and, you know, it's all evenly split. You know, I don't believe in taking more credit than anybody else in the room. I feel like if everybody's in the room and everybody's working hard on something, I think everybody deserves a piece of it. So I definitely credit John and Kevin on all of these songs, along with myself. And, lyrically, you know, I was going through a lot, and I'm going through a lot of, you know, I unfortunately lost my mom a couple of years ago. So, you know, that was definitely something that I, you know, will deal with forever, but also something that I wanted to, you know, sort of turn into something positive through music.
Right.
And so that was, you know, the strength of her was kind of seeping through me as I was coming up with the lyrics on the album. And some of the songs, there's one in particular, a song called Eyes on Me, that is about her. And so, you know, there was a lot of that. But then, you know, there's also other themes on the album, too. That's not like a concept album or anything like that. It's more just the kind of the personal concept that I have, you know, like the influence of why I made the album is obviously because of my mom, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that was a huge factor in making this album. But again, you know, there's kind of the classic themes of love and heartbreak and, you know, things I kind of gravitate towards as a young, almost 25-year-old.
Yeah,
songwriter in this day and age. So I mean, it kind of goes from one end of the spectrum to the other as far as like the lyrical content. And yeah, the John Mayer comparison, I very much appreciate that. I mean, John's music and John's career has been such a huge influence on me. Mm-hmm. And you know, his music has been so influential to you know, my career and just me as a person, as a fan. So yeah, I mean, I try to write songs for everybody. You know, I definitely I don't think about catering to a certain crowd. I feel like that's kind of a little creatively, you know, it becomes a little bit creatively dead if you do that, because then you're kind of only writing for a certain crowd of people. So I just try to write universally themed kind of songs that, first of all, have to touch me, but then, you know, hopefully if it touches me, it'll touch somebody else. So, yeah, I kind of think in that way when I'm coming up with these melodies and songs and, you know, lyrics and all that stuff.
Do you find now, I mean, it's odd, you know, this is sort of unique, a situation where you have somebody who's 24 on their fifth album, but, you know, when you got started in the business so young, and folks can read up on that if they want to get the whole backstory, but do you find it easier to write things that you feel the audience connects with now that you're, you know, a grisly old 24, but at least, you know, you've gone through some of life's, you know, the ups and downs of life, you know, relationships, you know, your parents, losing someone, things that are maybe universal, truly universal themes that, does that make coming up with lyrics that you feel comfortable with easier now?
I think so, for sure. I think I've never related to the words that I'm singing like any more than I ever have like now. Like, I feel like now is kind of like I'm getting to a point now where you feel something. I mean, not that I wasn't feeling something when I was 16 singing, but you just don't have the same, you know, and also like when you're getting into this industry at such a young age, it you know, you really don't know what kind of songs you really want to even write, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you're kind of like, I was put into and very, very grateful for everything, but I was put into a lot of things where, you know, it wasn't just me like making a decision on, you know, a song or, you know, what to put on record or whatever. I mean, there was a lot of people that were working behind the scenes to kind of come up with songs for me and all of that. So, I mean, I really didn't start writing like songs really up until I was around maybe 18. Was like the first time that I felt like I was kind of, you know, writing with my own voice. And I feel like now it's kind of evolved, and it is, I mean, it's evolving every day. And it will hopefully keep evolving forever. But, I feel like I'm at a point now where I can kind of stand behind the music that I'm making and, you know, not only feel confident about it, but feel like it's authentic and something that I can, you know, put out there and it doesn't feel like disingenuous, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, you look at artists, especially when they're really young like that, and you appreciate it for the talent of the musician. Obviously you had to play the songs, sing the songs, but now you're to the point where we can appreciate you as an artist more so. And if that, you know, the distinction between a musician and an artist, I think people probably get what I'm getting after there is that, you know, this is more of who you are, and the statement you want to make is a singer and a songwriter. And that's a nice thing to watch somebody develop and come through. You know, so many artists, you know, when they're young, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking of like artists that were really big when they were really little, you know, who haven't really made the transition successfully, you know, to kind of stand on their own merit, their own song. So it's a wonderful thing to see, and you're certainly headed in the right direction. As far as live, you know, as I mentioned, you'll be coming on the 28th to do the show here in Pittsburgh. Will we get a pretty heavy dose of the album, or are you still kind of working out? It's still a little ways off, kind of working out what you'll be playing by that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think fans should expect the majority of the new album to be played live. But, I mean, we definitely probably won't play every single song on the album. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm probably going to do a hybrid where I play stuff from Salvation and stuff from Wide Awake and possibly some older stuff. But, you know, we play some covers too. I mean, I like to mix things up, and I never really love to play the same kind of show every single night. I try to change it around a little bit. And I'm actually using some new, I'm kind of getting together with some new guys band on this tour. So it's going to be a little bit of a change. So, I mean, you know, you can rehearse so much, and you can get try to perfect it. But for me, like, the way I like to do it is just, I like to get a few shows under my belt, and then it starts to feel like it makes sense after maybe like show three or four.
Yeah, I was thinking
so, that. I mean, yeah. So I mean, this tour will definitely be Salvation material for sure. But fans, like I said, can expect many other songs as well. So.
Yeah, I was, as you were saying that, I'm thinking of, with a new band, you guys will have by the time you hit, you know, like the run in June, you probably have your legs under you, but it's a feeling out process. Do you enjoy the challenge, or does it, someone, maybe a better way to answer, does it energize you as a musician when you have a new band working behind you? Do you enjoy that process?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I love playing with new people, and I love the exploration element to it. But there's a kind of a sense of like familiarity too. I mean, I've been playing with a lot of the same people for years. And you know, there's just times where like guys can't do certain shows because they have other commitments. I play with a lot of, I'm very lucky to have kind of an arsenal of people that I play with that are all exceptionally great musicians and can, you know, get offers to do other things as well. You know, they're not totally indebted to my touring situation. So they're kind of off doing other things sometimes. And sometimes just time just doesn't allow them to go on the road with me. So, but you know, I'm, like I said, I'm lucky to have, you know, these people that I have been friends with for a long time that I can kind of call up and say, hey, you want to come and do this tour with me, and you know, they haven't said no to me yet, so I feel pretty grateful about that.
Yeah, you get to that point probably by album six or seven, you can just keep them on retainer all year round and pay them not to tour and come out with you when you're ready.
Yeah, well, that's the goal. That's eventually what I want to do. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the next level. But you're certainly headed in the right direction, Quinn. I want to thank you so much for your time today. Again, June 28th at the City Winery here in Pittsburgh. We look forward to seeing you, and can't wait to have you in town, man. Thank you.
Thanks, man.
All right, that about wraps it up. Quinn Sullivan, June 28th at the City Winery. His new album will be out earlier in the month of June. If you need some new music to buy right now, I suggest you get Jeff Pilson's End Machine and Revolution Saints albums. Both have been released this year, and he will be in town on July 31st for what should be an amazing July summer night. Styx, Foreigner, John Waite. I can't, just the sheer amount of hits that you could put in a 3-4 hour show right there is amazing. So I encourage you wholeheartedly to get out and get yourself tickets. Enjoy a great night out under the stars listening to some great music. So I want to thank you all for listening. Invite you to check out IronCityRocks.com. All of our social medias are IronCityRocks, and you can drop us email at IronCityRocks@gmail.com. If you're listening, we still have some Brett Michaels Party Gras tickets to give away. We've got some other really cool interviews in the works to bring you, to get you pumped for these shows coming to Pittsburgh. I hope that these interviews inspire you to get out, get some tickets, and go see some of these great musicians. The attendance at these shows is what helps when booking agents look at tours to want to come back. And Pittsburgh has been very fortunate over the last couple years to really see, I think, a sharp, noticeable increase in the quality of shows and tours that do not miss Pittsburgh. So, and that is in large part by you people going to the shows, bringing your business. You've got choices in entertainment and bands and things like that. So appreciate you coming out and supporting the hard rock bands so we continue to get these great shows. And until next time, thank you so much for listening.